everyone's focused on more leads, I make the argument, get focused on serving people better. I think that's why we see like 85% of agents fail within the first 5 years.
I would also argue this, and you may agree or disagree.
But for the first 12 to 18 months of your career, if you want to make money, you're going to be working harder than if you were working a 9-to-5 job. There's an argument that like, if you only do it when you feel like it, it's never gonna work out. Leads, training, and support. Regardless of what stage your business is in, there's gonna be times where you have to do stuff you don't wanna do.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
All right, the other day I was sent a screenshot from the BAM newsletter. So I love it when that happens.
Oh yeah.
And it was like a matter of seconds, boom, Tom Ferry sends it to me and you send it to me.
It seems like it was almost coordinated.
It was almost coordinated. Screenshot, one of our newsletters. The number one problem real estate agents face.
Yeah.
And it's a problem you've found quite easily to solve.
Sure.
And so that's recruiting. That's not only recruiting in the sense of, okay, I want more agents, but just acquiring talent to help you. I believe if you're a single agent or if you're building a team, you need to build around you.
Correct.
Right. You need staff, whether you're the single agent, especially in the new world that we're heading into.
Of course. Leverage is everything.
And so we've got the pleasure of sitting with Chris Giannos, the CEO and founder of Humanize, which is a recruiting company. We'll get into a little bit of that maybe later on. But Chris, your background is Zillow, recruiting in real estate, building teams, and now starting Humanize. Just give me the journey so people have a background if they're not familiar.
Yeah. So usually when I lead with the Zillow thing, people are like, ugh, instantly puts a bad taste in their mouth, right? But I learned so much in being there. I got the pleasure of like working under people like Greg Schwartz, right?
I love Greg. Shout out to Greg.
Greg's awesome. Greg hired me when I was 19 years old. And I remember interviewing with like a director of sales in Orange County first. And they said, hey, you got to talk to the boss because we don't know about this. And you're kind of young and kind of like rough around the edges. And I got on the phone with Greg and Greg's like, you're going to do exactly what we say. And you're going to work super hard, right? And I'm like, 100%. Yeah, I'm in. And then they extend me an offer and the rest is history. So worked at Zillow for about 5 years, did everything from individual contributor. I probably cold called you at one point, right?
It's possible.
We were making cold calls, 150 outbound dials a day to pretty
call
much.
Call me back on Monday.
Yeah, call me back a click or like less polite things, right?
No, I would always be polite.
But we'd make outbound cold calls, did everything from inside sales, selling Premier Agent, got into leadership when I was about 21 years old and was running a sales team, and then ended my career there in like strategic accounts. So I was working with like our top spending customers in the book. So I got exposure to a lot of different real estate agents and teams and broker owners and kind of learned that space. It's very common at Zillow for people to think they know everything about real estate because they worked at Zillow. So you leave there like, I'm going to go be an agent and I'm going to run circles around everyone.
I was, saying your experience with Zillow, I'm like, okay, I'm already thinking in my head, just so you know where my head's at, if you're listening to this pod or watching, I'm like, my next question is going to be, why do people at Zillow always think
I have no
that
idea.
They know the industry inside and out when they haven't been an investor, an agent,
nothing,
a sales recruiter, run a brokerage, had a license.
They like brainwash you into it in a good way. I think you have to have confidence.
There's a lot of great, we both know a lot of great people.
Yeah.
Zillow, people know, they accuse me of a Zillow fanboy because of how I speak about the brand. So this isn't, we're not putting anybody, we're just saying that there is this.
Oh, it exists. And I see it. There's so many people in our space now that were doing the exact same thing I was doing at Zillow that are now in leadership roles in real estate brokerages and teams. Like it's very common or crushing it as agents, right? The thing that happens though, is you get onto that side of the fence and you get a very rude awakening, right? Where you're like, I think I know everything. And then you start buying Zillow leads and then you're going, wait a second, this is way harder than I thought it was. Right. Like,
so was that the first like eye opener for you going into brokerage? Your first brokerage is Remax brokerage.
Yep, went to a Remax brokerage.
And then you're buying Zillow leads and you're like on the other side and you're like, not every lead is good. Was that the first moment where you're like, this thing's hard?
The first thing that was hard, I got my first phone call, right? It was like a Zillow lead, $350,000 condo in Santa Ana, California, which in Orange County is like the bottom of the price point. Right. And I remember showing up and, I couldn't figure out how to get my super key to open the super box. So I'm sitting there with this buyer, the first time meeting them, like shaking, trying to open the door.
Everybody's been there, by the way.
Oh my gosh. And like showed them through the house. And I was like, I don't know what to say to them before we go in the house. I don't know what to say to them while we're in the house. And I sure as hell don't know what to say after the showing, right? That's when it kind of clicked in my brain that I was like, this is far less get lead, show house, get offer accepted, make millions of dollars, right? So that first experience just, it broke everything. And I think one of two things happen with people that transition from Zillow into real estate. Either they're like, okay, this is hard. I just want to be in leadership and like coach agents, right? Or they go, okay, this is hard. I probably need to learn how to do this to be effective. So for the first year, I didn't even think about a team. All I did was figure out, how do I arbitrage online leads into commission checks? And I got really, really good at that over that first year, right? Did like 21 deals my first year, was stoked. 100% of it came from Zillow, right? And then after that first year, I went, wait a second. I've developed this process on how to do this. I should probably be teaching other people how to do this, mm-hmm. right? And that's how kind of my team journey started.
Yeah, because first 12 months is typically like 2 to 6 deals.
Yeah.
You did well over 3X the high side of
yeah.
So you figured something out. What did you figure out?
Having a standardized duplicable process is the only way to produce a consistent, constant outcome at scale, right? So at Zillow, and this is why I think even going through that ecosystem of that sales org that Greg built so beautifully, everyone was on the same page. The pitch was the same every time. The close was a little different. There was some variation with personality and stuff, right? But you knew for a fact you were going to say the same thing each and every time so you could produce a consistent outcome and like meet quota. I developed that for online leads myself. So I said, okay, cool. I need to figure out what that first intake phone call sounds like. I need to prepare for showings the same way every time, regardless if it's my first time meeting with someone or their 20th time meeting with someone. I need to make sure that when I get face-to-face with a customer, the showing goes the exact same way every time. Only outcomes that are different are kind of like what their decision is, right? And then lastly, when I'm actually going to get an offer accepted, how am I communicating with the listing agent? What does my offer submission package look like? All of that had to be standardized. So when I trial and errored my way through that and figured out what works and what didn't work, then I had this playbook of going, cool, I now have this. I can now teach it.
And right? You did this while doing deals. You didn't like stop doing deals and say, let me go build all this stuff in the shed.
I mean, you kept doing deals. 100%, but I probably spent, I don't know, like $50,000 or $60,000 just lighting it on fire, trying to get enough leads to actually trial and error what was going to work. Right. Yeah. So there was for sure an opportunity cost.
Are there too many leads?
Yeah, 100%. I think people—
Does Zillow know that?
No, which is the crazy part, right? And I still have friends at Zillow. My wife still works at Zillow, right? So I'm fortunate to like have a really good pulse on what's going on. Everyone is so focused on more leads. And I think what they should be focused on is better conversion, right? Because if I got 10 leads from Zillow now and an identical agent got 10 leads from Zillow now, I know that out of those 10, over the course of 12 to 18 months, I could probably put 4 or 5 of them into escrow pretty quick, right? Versus the industry standard, like 4 or 5% conversion.
Yeah, 5% is doing pretty good.
It's crushing it, right? Yeah. But it's because I have a standard
on a six month run.
Yeah.
That's what they're looking
at. Time scaled, but like everyone's focused on more leads. I make the argument, get focused on serving people better, right? Because I've even had leads come through that they didn't even buy a house for me, but I blew it out of the park with what they were expecting. They decided to put it on hold and then they gave me referrals, right?
Right.
So that comes from being so good at your craft that regardless of that person transacts, it's just an interaction, right? I think you should focus on the quality of your interactions. Once you have the quality part down, then focus on multiplying it with like the number of interactions you're having. But start with the quality for sure, regardless if you're brand new or you're experienced, because the skill set doesn't quantify from like, if you're used to converting open house buyers, right? Or SOI or whatever it is, working internet leads is a completely different game.
Totally.
Right? It's someone that's swiped right on Zillow, basically. It's like Tinder almost. You've got a stranger on the phone who doesn't know you, doesn't like you, doesn't trust you, who's super skeptical, that doesn't want to meet with you, but wants to see a house. And then we wonder why those appointments are usually like not very solid or warm when we initially show up. And it's because they don't know you. They're not after you. They're after the house. So when we focus on that presentation and what happens at that showing, then the magic happens. There's a reason why like 10% of agents do 90% of the business with any lead source, Zillow being a freak of nature. With Flex and stuff, I think there's now 400 or 500 Flex teams nationally.
Yep.
That's a small fraction of the teams. And I would argue that most teams that are on Flex now, I know you guys are crushing it.
Yeah.
Right? It's a great catalyst and a great driver of revenue because your agents are good at it.
Yep.
Right? So it's the same concept.
But to your point, there's a ton of leads to get to a certain
yeah,
number of conversions.
Sure.
And it's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and then that lead is also being duplicated sometimes across portals.
That's always fun. Know,
just this morning when we did the Hashi, there were 4 million roughly existing home sales.
Yep.
Okay. On an annualized in the last 12 months.
Sure.
But yet there's hundreds of millions of leads being generated.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the craziest thing you ever saw at Zillow?
Oh man, I'm on the record, right? I'll share a story without sharing names. One time at Zillow at an undisclosed office location, someone mailed something that, so they got fired, terminated for bad behavior. In retaliation, mailed something to the office that they shouldn't in a box, right? That got opened in a large room of people to the point where they called like a hazmat issue, right? And the fire department came out, right? And I pulled up in my car from lunch and another unknown person who won't be named, who you might know, is in the parking lot, butt naked, right? In front of like a shower curtain on the side of the fire truck, getting a chemical bath to like decontaminate him, right? So that was
the is there like an emoji for what was in this box or?
Oh yeah, there's for sure, full frontal, right? But that was the craziest thing I saw there that was, it was pretty hilarious that the sales org there, you either flourished in it or you like floundered in it, right? It was, there was no real middle.
Is there a culture of pressure, a significant amount of pressure on employees there, or is the culture, you know, different?
Yeah.
And, you know, what's the culture for employees at Zillow?
I think any good tech company, and this is how I'm running Humanize now, right, is data-driven meritocracy, which is a really big, funny way of saying those who do the best get the most, right? And you think about, you hear stories about Amazon and Netflix, super high performance, like esteemed places to work. You don't really hear good things. And I think it's usually because people that can't hack it, like you think about bad reviews on your Zillow profile or Yelp, right? People usually aren't inclined naturally to write glowing reviews, but anyone that's even slightly upset is always going to go on and speak their mind.
Yeah.
I think it's the same concept with tech companies, Zillow included. You hear a lot of the, like the complaining from the cheap seats, yeah, right? My experience there, and especially in any sales org at a tech company, there's a certain degree of pressure. You have a quota to meet, right? It's because finance does budgets and there's goals to be met, right? And they have to report it to Wall Street. I wouldn't define it as pressure. I would define it as high expectation, right? I never felt like, oh, there's a gun to the back of your head. You got to do this and it's blah, 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 blah. It was just, here's your target. And without fail, every 6 to 9 months, the target moved up because the brand became better, more brand recognition, easier to sell. And they just kept moving the goalpost.
And then when you went into real estate brokerage,
oh,
were you shocked to see how there's such a lack of expectation of standard?
100%. Like no one cares about you, right? They care about you when you call and need something and like need a hug or need to be loved on a little bit. But for the most part, it's here's your key to the front door. Here's a business card order form. Good luck, right?
But do you find that the agents almost resist that standard expectation at times? You know, there's so many agents,
yeah,
and there's certain ones that are like, I signed up for this, so I didn't have, you know, I use the word pressure, but use the word expectation or a standard.
Yeah.
I didn't sign up to be living up to this type of quota or standard.
I think agents make the mistake. Like when I talked to, I don't know, I've probably interviewed 1500 or 2000 agents myself personally to join my team at one point or another, right? If I heard, hey, why did you get into real estate? And they said, oh, I wanted the flexibility and I wanted like to be my own boss and the freedom, and they were new, the first thing I said is, okay, let me be honest with you for a second. That's a lie, right? It exists later, but for the first 12 to 18 months of your career, if you want to make money, you're going to be working harder than if you were working a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
It's a myth, right? Depending on how they took that was how the rest of my conversation went with that person, right? But I think that people get into the industry wanting what they see experienced seasoned agents that have worked so hard for have, right? I've got the lifestyle. I can go on vacation. I mean, most people, they get to a certain level and it's just workaholic 24/7, right? We were talking about like the Tom Tools and Lisa Chinatis of the world. They're animals. They're killers, right?
Yeah.
But to that same token, I think we see people that have achieved what we want and go, oh, cool, I want that. What they don't see is the decade of work to get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a shock for people going from corporate to real estate brokerage. And I think that's why we see like 85% of agents fail within the first 5 years, because there is no, like, there's no bumpers on the bowling alley, right? If you throw a gutter ball, there's nothing really there to stop you.
Yeah. Right? And so you interviewed a whole bunch of agents because you went from being an agent to building building a Remax office, then building an independent brokerage. Yep. And once you went independent, you were doing that through recruiting.
Yep.
The agents are like, hey, I'm here for, you know, free schedule. Percentage of them just didn't work out. What's a good like expectation for somebody who's trying to build a staff or build a network of agents underneath them to convert on these appointments? And what should they be looking for? Should that reflect their core values? Like, what's the expectation of how many you should be able to hire?
I think about recruiting holistically, right? I think that the way that it's taught, right? You can't really go online and Google like how to recruit real estate agents. And when you do, the advice you get and the insight you get is a decade old or longer, right? I think the agent now that is working really well on teams like yours, right? That I find, we call it LTS at Humanize, right? Leads, training, and support. Those are like the three primary catalysts for behavior change. That's why people leave brokerages or other teams and join teams that actually provide those three things, right? At least the demographic we see. In knowing that, I think it's important to remember that you have to be able to correctly articulate your value prop, because if you can't or correctly articulate it to someone, that's a sales pitch conversation. You're not interviewing someone, right? And I think that a lot of our customers and people that get to us that we coach through this, they treat it like a job interview and they 20 questions someone and then go, cool, do you want to sign up? It's like, well, you didn't really tell me a whole lot about why I should sign up, right? So we coach everyone to a two-step interview process, a 10 to 15 minute long initial conversation. Internally, we call it a phone screen. Externally, we tell our customers, don't call those phone screens because no one likes to be screened, right? We call them opportunity calls externally. So it's a 10 to 15 minute call where either you or your recruiter is going to get on the phone and all you're going to do is do two things. You're going to qualify to what we call the three C's: culture, character, and coachability, right? You want to figure, that's your qualification benchmark. Because if they have those three things and you have leads, training, and support, you can turn that person into a producer regardless of where they're at, right? The second thing you want to do is if they fit that box, you want to tell them why they should come meet with you in person. So you need to give them a 30,000 foot view of why your team is good, right? Or why your brokerage is good. From there, it's a really simple thing. You either close for a face-to-face interview, which is a super simple thing to do, or if they don't fit, I'm going to circle up with the rest of our leadership team and I'll be in touch with next steps. You move on, right? The face-to-face interview, I think, is just a longer format of that conversation, right?
Deeper.
So tell me about your business now. What's going on in the last 12 months? That's my favorite question to ask someone, because I can figure out those three things without even having to go deeper. Tell me about the last 12 months of your real estate business. How's it been going? That conversation usually only goes one of two ways. Either I'm listening for, hey, I've had a great time. I've done a bunch of deals. I'm working super hard. I'm doing open houses, but Chris, I'm just not getting it. Something is missing, right? Mm-hmm. LTS, something in there. Or I encourage any agent that's listening to this to like never do this, right? But a lot of the time when you ask that question, it turns into like the blame game, which isn't
the market, my broker,
the leads. I call it broker shaming, right? But they'll, yeah, Chris, working super hard, but all the leads that my broker Bob gives me are crap. They don't work and the market sucks and my broker promised me all this stuff and he didn't deliver on anything. That agent, regardless of how well your team is structured, is going to be doing the same thing in 6 months.
Since April, we have uploaded new and sought after courses, content, and tactical assets for your business into the BAMX platform. Not articles behind a paywall that only pontificate to you what you should think and do, but education that actually shows you how to do what you need in today's market. Every day, we continue to add more content into BAMX and our private Facebook community. Content that works. Content that our members have exclusive access to daily. It's why over 1,500 of you and climbing have joined us in BAMX. It's also why tomorrow's price is guaranteed to be higher than today's. That's called inflation. Do not wait. any longer. Use code Byron and join the thousands of agents taking their business to the next level today. Code Byron for 10% off. See you in BAMX.
So I encourage any agent to think about that before they go to interview at their next team or brokerage or wherever they're going. Focus on you, not why you're not succeeding because of someone else, right? So figuring that out. And then again, it's just going through what's working, right? That leads training and support stuff. I think where most of our clients and most people that I talk to struggle when they're actually in like a recruiting appointment, the close is too hard, right? It's too much like, okay, well, if you're ready to get started, I'm going to go get everything and we're going to sign it right here. I think the generation of agent, like if we think back the last 10 years, the average demographic of agent 10 years ago is a lot different than it is today, right? It's changed a lot. There's different people, different demographics coming into the marketplace. And knowing that the generation that I find is having the most success now doesn't necessarily want to be hard closed, right? They don't want to sign on the dotted line or else. They want a cool. Mine's really simple. Byron, if all this sounds great, I think you'd be a great fit to our team, man. I think that you've got everything we're looking for. You fit from a culture, character, and coachability standpoint. Do you have any questions for me about what we can provide you value-wise that I haven't been able to answer yet? Most of the time, if you do it right, no. Perfect. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you over an offer letter that's got everything you and I just talked about so that later when you're making your decision, you can reference that list. If you have any questions, it's all there, including split fees, everything, right? If all that looks good, all you need to do is reply to me saying, hey, Chris, I dig it. I'll send you over an independent contractor agreement. We'll be off to the races and onboarding. 7 out of 10 times when I said that, they'd go, can you just send it to me now? Right.
And I'm ready to go.
Yeah. I go, cool. Awesome. Let me do that real quick. You should still go home and read it, Byron. And then usually what would happen is they'd go out to their car, they'd read it and say, I'm in, and then send it over. Right. But I think taking the pressure off like that, anyone for most roles, you can do that. Right. It doesn't have to be a hard close on the spot. And if someone's willing to make a decision that fast, are they really the type of person you're looking for?
Right. Or they'll back out that fast. They'll go back and do what you just said. They'll think about it and be like, I don't know, I made a quick decision. Right. And they'll back out only because they made a quick decision.
Correct.
You made a decision that fast, somebody says at home, and then they're like, they're out. You said this could be relatable to any role. I mean, I would also argue this, and you may agree or disagree. An agent or a broker should not be making a hire of an agent until they've actually hired their first assistant.
Oh, I agree 100%.
Transaction coordinator, you know, these roles that are supportive of their business. So these same principles that you're talking about when hiring an agent, recruiting an agent, are they the same when you're hiring that role or are they different?
Different, okay. Right? I think it's different for every role. I get called a lot. We at Humanize, we like to work with teams for the most part or brokerages that are already somewhat established. Sometimes we'll work with like the, hey, I'm thinking about starting a team.
Sure.
When our sales team gets on those calls, they know the conversation first is, why are you starting a team? Right? Because a lot of these people, and I've talked to so many people that make this mistake, are like, well, I'm super busy. I feel like I need to hire a buyer's agent. Right? And it's like, cool. What's your goal? Because a lot of people, it's, oh, I want to do more transactions and make more money. I go, fantastic. Then you shouldn't start a real estate team yet, right? Create an infinite amount of leverage in your own business first. Doctor's office model, right? You go to the doctor's office, that doctor's in there for 5 minutes. You've got a PA or a nurse that comes in and takes your blood pressure, does your chart, reads everything. Figure out what you can take off of your plate that isn't your zone of expertise and give it to someone who you can either pay hourly or a percentage of the commission or whatever it is before you start going big.
And your margin will be higher that way.
Exponentially higher.
Yeah.
Right. So if the goal is money, right, then 100%, I would recommend create leverage first by way of an assistant or whatever it is.
Now, a great assistant can make a significant and help you scale up. If you want to get to that team level, it can help you scale to get there so much faster. You know, a middle of the road assistant or a weak assistant could at times pull your business back.
100%.
How do you identify a great assistant?
So I'm lucky because my assistant, Andrea, kind of found me, which was super cool, right? She came in, someone set up an interview for a front desk person, and I didn't know that, and I thought she was an agent, right? So I interviewed her like an agent, and after like 20 minutes, I was like, you don't know what you're talking about, right? Like, but she kind of like BS'd her way through it to a certain extent, right? And kind of held her own, and I was like, what are you here for? Right. And she's like, oh, I'm like applying for a front desk role. I was like, but you just almost convinced me that you were an agent. I like you. We should talk about something else. Right. And she's been with me for like 2.5 years now. Right. an agent role specifically, I think when you're looking for that person, I think one of the most underlooked things is like personality fit. You have to find someone that's going to mesh with like your style.
Yes.
When I look at
different
operators and different people, everyone's different, right? Yeah. When you look at Tom and like Ruby, right? Their personalities are very complementary, right? Yeah. Andrea and I, she knows I'm nuts, right? She knows I'm going to send her text messages at like 11:30, right? And like, that's just a part of the gig, right? I think before you do anything, there's a natural inclination to like send a DISC assessment. That's important, but it's not the most important thing. You want to make sure that you can get along with someone really, really well.
Mm.
And I would almost argue that with an assistant role, go for the moniker of like hire fast, fire faster.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that.
Right. And like almost even bring them on like an expectation that, hey, this is a 90-day thing. We're going to figure out if we like each other.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a great way to put it too.
Yeah. You might not like me.
You may not like working for me.
Right. You may not like me. And like, I think that everyone wants like the perfect blueprint in here. Was what the DISC assessment looks like? The DISC assessment can look great, but if your personalities don't mesh and aren't complementary, it's not going to work out. Right?
There's a lot of art to being a great assistant and matching with that person.
Yeah. And like, I just some anecdotes and some examples, like Andrea has gotten really good at telling me no, right? Where I'll put her on a three-way text or reach out to her and ask her, can you set this up with Byron or do X, Y, and Z? And she'll be like, you don't have time this week. And if you push it, you're not going to be okay. And I know how that goes, right? Because then you get sick and you get run into blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So she's gotten really good at saying no politely, right? And I think a good assistant, their job is to make your life easier, right? So if you're making a hire or whatever that looks like, just be intentional with the personality fit, especially for an assistant, because if they start making your life harder, it's not the right fit.
I've seen your schedule a few times.
Yeah.
I mean, your schedule's stacked. Yeah. Dude.
I try and intentionally.
How many Zooms a day?
I'm in Zoom for like 12 hours a day, yeah. But.
And they're like half hours. So that's like 20, 24 Zooms in a common day for you.
I try and stack it. I want to get belly to belly and face to face with as many of our customers and as many of our potential customers and other people in this industry as possible, because I know this level that I'm running at now isn't going to last forever just from an endurance standpoint. So I'm like, I might as well get it while I'm good and I've got the energy and endurance to do this and capitalize on the momentum. So like Tom was talking about it today, right? Like most people get to 70% and think it's 100, right? Yeah. Like I'm trying to find seventh gear. And I hit it, but I could not do it without Andrea and without our team at Humanize, right? It's just not possible because I have a natural inclination. And I'm sure you do too. Like a high D on a DISC assessment. I want to do everything.
Yeah.
And no one can do it as good as me, which is a crazy lie that we tell ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's important to start realizing that other people can do it just as good as you if you teach them how to do it. And you give them a playbook on how to do it.
Yeah.
Right. But it involves relinquishing control and letting go and trusting people, which was super hard for me. But
I think it was 2015. I said it in front of like 5,000 or 6,000 people on a Tom X stage. I said, can't do this business alone.
No.
And so that means whether you need to be on a team, be in the right environment, build a team, build assistance around you. There's a lot of different ways to do that. But doing this alone is impossible.
It's not fun either.
What are some of the, so you've got the great team, but what are some of the other hacks that you're doing maybe to maintain the endurance of going that? Because we were kind of brainstorming yesterday. Yeah. It's like, what is getting past 70%, getting that extra 5-10% that push?
Yeah.
What does that look like? And, you know, I guess it's probably different for everybody, but it is the difference between, you know, that less than 10 transaction producer, 10 or 12 middling around there. And that man, 24, 36, 48 transaction producer. And that producer, the heavier one, the 48, you're going to need to see a lot more of those in the future as things change.
Yeah. As we see consolidation and commission compression and all this stuff, I think that it's important to remember that you're only as good as you are feeling. Right. And on days, there's an argument that like, if you only do it when you feel like it, it's never going to work out, right? Okay. You got to find that way to find that other gear. Something that I've intentionally done, I realize the more decisions I have to make in a day, the more fatigue I have,
right?
When it involves decision-making and figuring out which way am I going to do, what am I going to do? I've tried to figure out and kind of observe, and I'll give you like an example. I travel a lot, right? I've been on like 17 flights since the first of the year.
Yeah.
the decision fatigue of finishing an event and like calling an Uber and figuring out how I'm going to get to the airport and like what I'm going to eat and do all that stuff is a mess, right? It's just, it's one more decision that I have to make that I know is going to require like this much brain bandwidth that I might not have, right? So now like my admin, Andrea, my travel's booked out for the next 6 months. There's a car that picks me up. There's a car that drops me off. I don't even have to think about it. Someone just calls me and is like, hey, I'm here. And I'm like, perfect. And I just get to show up. How do I make that like relatable and something that everyone can think about? I would think about what gives you anxiety, right? What gives you, where do you feel friction in your business? Whatever that is. If it's answering a seller call to give them an update on what their listing did this week on a Sunday afternoon or something. Like,
so anxiety checklist.
100%. And a lot of the time we don't want to lean into that because it's uncomfortable, right? I think it's important that everyone figures out, what am I not having fun doing? And there's an argument to be made, regardless of what stage your business is in, there's going to be times where you have to do stuff you don't want to do.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. But as you scale, your job should be figuring out, how do I get out of those things and hire myself out of it and create an accountability checklist for someone else to do so that I can focus better on my highest and best use of time. Todd and I were just talking about this, right? Like, things that you don't enjoy doing, an anxiety checklist is a perfect way to put it.
I like that.
You should write down a list, spend an hour. Don't spend 10 minutes. Don't do it in 5 minutes and half-ass it.
Yeah.
I think someone should sit down on like a Sunday afternoon when they don't have a whole lot going on, or maybe the next time you sit in an open house or whatever, and write out, don't stop with two or three. Write down like 10 or 15 things you hate doing and figure out, how do I get this off my plate? And you can't just give it to someone with no expectation or no training or nothing and say, hey, this is your responsibility now. Right? You got to figure out, how do I take this off my plate? How do I train this person to meet expectation? How do I show them what good looks like, so I never have to think about it again?
How do you show somebody what good looks like? How do you train
people? I've always doing an, I do, we do, you do, right? So like, I'll give you an example. You're recruiting an agent and you want to teach them how to show a house, which I think is one of the most underrated things on the planet. No one, or another example that's even better, like, you have a client who wants to see a house. You got a Zillow lead. They want to see a house tomorrow at 3 o'clock. That first phone call you make to the listing agent, that's where conversion starts. Mm-hmm. And no one thinks about that. It's not as simple as set the appointment. My goal is that first phone call, I'm setting the appointment with the listing agent, but I'm also breaking bread with that person, like a virtual knuckle dap, right? I want that person to be my BFF, so that if that person ends up liking that house, I can call that person and be like, yo, Byron, it's Chris. I got good news, man, right? And you've got some bread broken with that person. When I was training agents to do that, you can't just say, okay, cool. Well, your goal, Byron, is to make friends with Todd. If you're going to call Todd on his listing, your goal is to make friends with him.
Because not everybody has that charisma.
No. So you got to script it, yeah, right? So during my onboarding training, so I developed and taught the same training twice a month, every month for 28 months in a row when I was growing my last team, right? And it was a week-long boot camp on how to convert internet leads. That's it. Because my goal was lead arbitrage, given to agents, close deals, grow really quickly, right? We did 436 transactions our first full year in with that training specifically. So the I do, we do, you do is cool. I'm going to show you what this looks like. So during training, we would make phone calls, right? During the training, after I showed them what ALMS live. I'd pick up the phone and call a listing agent to schedule a showing for myself, right? And I would just go preview it. But I would show them what it sounds like reading the script that I developed in the room. So there were 5 or 10 people in the room that were listening, and I would read the script, call the listing agent, run through it. And did it work every time? No. Sometimes you get an agent on the phone who's like, Chris, I'm not going to tell you how many offers I have. I'm not going to tell you what a good price looks like on this.
Yeah. Objections. Just right? Like when you're calling an expired listing.
100%. But if I can win 65 or 70% of the time, it's better than none.
Yeah.
Right. Because the example I want people to avoid is, you get a lead, you show a house, you just set the appointment. Your buyer goes, Byron, I love this house. I have to have this house. Whatever I have to do, man, I'm in. And you go, cool. Kill all your momentum. Stop where you're doing. Let's kill all the momentum. And now I'm going to call this listing agent who may or may not pick up the phone, who might take me 2 or 3 days to get a hold of.
And start at zero.
And start way down here when you're not inside the house. And that's not a sales thing. That's a persuasion thing, right? You want to be in a spot where you can capitalize opportunity when it presents itself. I got told over and over and over again, Chris, you're lucky. You just got a good lead. It's like, no. I prepared for when a client was going to be motivated. Luck is preparation meeting opportunity, right? I was prepared for when they were ready. I could go, cool. So I got the scoop, Byron. Here's everything you need to know about this house. here's what it's going to take to get the offer accepted.
Well, sounds like more work, Chris.
When they're 100, yes. But when they're in the house and they're going, cool, I can see it. I can see the pictures on the wall. I can envision myself living here. When I tell them, because this was in like 2021, 2022, Byron, to get this house, you have to write $150,000 over ask with no contingencies. I can get you the house, but we're going to have to hammer this thing, man. The buyer's looking around going, okay, like I like this house enough. Let's do it. Right. But the I do, we do, you do, give them an example of what good looks like in a setting where they can just listen and take notes. After you get off the phone, and this goes with any script, after you get off the phone, cool. Byron, you're going to grade my call. So here's your scorecard of what I should have hit on that call. How did I do? And they're just peer-to-peer critiquing themselves in that room. The we do thing is the inverse. So then next, they're going to make a phone call and the whole group's going to listen. Mm-hmm. And I let everyone know, like, hey, if you get embarrassed in front of a big group of people, that's okay. That's why we're doing this. Because when you make these calls by yourself, it's going to be exponentially easier. If anyone in the room laughs at someone that blows it, you're out. It doesn't work like that here, right? If someone has a tough call with a really tough listing agent, they're going to get off the phone and we're going to clap, right? If you laugh or make a joke, I have a zero tolerance rule for that. So it keeps the room in the right mentality, right? So same
concept. But we're going to give critical feedback.
100%.
At the same time.
Yeah. But if you laugh or crack a joke, yeah. Byron got his butt kicked. It's like, I don't have tolerance for that. So the we do, they're doing that. They're getting peer-to-peer feedback, right? And they're getting it to do it in like a testing environment. And then the you do, the final test, right? They're making those phone calls. We're all listening very similar to we do, but they're nailing it this time, right? You go out and do it on your own now. That's something that I learned at Zillow. That wasn't Cristiano's piece unique. That was Zillow had a training bay. We went through a 2-week onboarding at Zillow when they taught us how to sell Premier Agent. And then you went out into a training bay. And that's what we did all day long, was that for like a month and a half with no quota. It was just like, figure out how to sell. So with any role, with any position, I do, we do, you do. That's the key to success, because they have an example of what good looks like. They get to practice with the bumpers up in the bowling alley, and then they're off to the races.
Training 101 right there.
100%.
Rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
I want to totally shift gears, because yeah. You brought Zillow back up again.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to do this. Who wins the listing portal war?
Oh man.
And what do portals look like
in
the future?
I would be thinking about, if I was a betting man, and I have to be very Switzerland, because I want to play nice with all of these companies, right?
You could say, I don't know who's going to win, but what does the winner look like in the future?
I think the winner is whoever gets closest to the consumer. And that's not a very popular opinion with most agents, right? Because it's like Zillow exists, and I'll come full circle on this. Zillow, homes.com, and realtor.com exist out of necessity. So when you think about how Zillow got started, do you know where the name Zillow came from?
I've heard this story? Yeah.
Zillions of Pillows thing?
I've heard there's a podcast out there you can listen to.
So Rich Barton and Lloyd Frank spun Expedia out of Microsoft with seed funding from Bill Gates. They had fun, built a big company, .com boom, made a $1 billion, and then went to buy real estate. And they were like, this sucks. There were multiple experiences reaching out to a listing agent to schedule a showing where they just didn't pick up the phone or never got a call back. Zillow, homes.com, realtor.com created out of necessity, because a consumer had a frustrated experience. Someone said, I wonder if there's a more motivated group of people that we can connect these people to. And that's why it happens. So Zillow and all these companies were created out of necessity. So if we ever get frustrated as agents, and I'm not a Zillow fanboy either, right? But if we ever get frustrated as to why they have so much control, why don't you pick up your phone, right? And I know a lot of your listeners probably are in a different boat, but I would encourage everyone to think about the last time you made 10 phone calls to schedule 10 showings. How many of those agents actually picked up the phone? Mm-hmm. Even if you were calling with a buyer who's pre-qualified up to $1 million and wants to buy now. That's why those websites exist. So when I say whoever's closest to the consumer, that person wins. Zillow, realtor.com, homes.com have turned the lights on. Before, when you wanted to buy or sell real estate, you called Remax and said, someone on floor duty picked up the phone.
Yeah, it's like, could be anybody.
Come on in, right? And then it was basically like a coin flip if they had a good experience or not.
Yeah.
But same token, if you wanted to buy a house, you had to do the same thing. And in order for you to get into those properties, you had to talk to an agent, right? That was like the gatekeeper. Whenever there's a gatekeeper like that, that is essentially in control of the experience, the level of service tends to slip, because you can't do it without that person, right? Now with these companies, I don't think there's a world where agents don't, I'd be in a world of hurt if that ever happened, right? Where the agent thing doesn't exist. So that's not where I'm going with this. But I think that whoever wins the portal war is going to be the person that gets closest to the consumer, but also doesn't completely throw the agent under the bus, right? Because with there's still a necessity there that's super important. Historically, Zillow's
acknowledged that.
Oh, 100%. I mean,
Rich Barton said it in the fourth quarter of last year at their event. He's like, we know for 20 years of data, the agent is a necessity in the 100%. Transaction.
Rich Barton's a very inspirational dude, but he's also extremely competitive from what I've heard and very cutthroat in a good way, right? Like any good executive should be. What I've come to realize is that everyone wants to do the same thing. And like Zillow, for example, is kind of doing it. They have the greatest business model of all time. They charge a 40%. They have every agent in the country that's working flex leads on a 60-40 split with no liability.
No brokerage liability.
Brilliant, right? Yeah. Great business model. Why didn't I think of that? But yes. Whoever's developing those relationships and not just completely dismissing the agent's going to win. Historically, when you look at tech companies like this, right? Even outside the prop tech space, just across the board, there's usually two, right? Uber and Lyft.
Yep.
Right? DoorDash and Postmates, whatever it is. There's like two.
Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah, 100%. You just, there's two. I don't think there's a world where Zillow, Realtor.com and Homes.com like coexist and there's three and it's equally distributed.
We're on a love seat and there's three people trying to fit in.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how exactly it plays out because I know Homes.com strategy is essentially like arbitrage cash for impressions.
Yep.
Right. Which is that's the playbook. It'll be interesting to see how they monetize. And I don't have too much experience or insight into how they're planning to monetize, but if it's in any way similar to CoStar, they have a clear path to do it. It's just a function of, I think about the same thing. Zillow, Premier Agent, Flex, whatever you're on makes sense because if listing agent isn't going to pick up the phone and Zillow can generate a lead there and send it to a buyer's agent who's far more motivated, someone will pay for that lead all day. If Homes.com decides to monetize the listing stuff, how are they going to prevent buyer from calling and not getting the phone picked up? Even if the listing is featured, then what?
Right.
So again, I think whoever figures out how to make sure that the consumer has the best experience is going to win. And may the best man or woman win.
Best experience. And there's a lot of hurdles to jump through. And as things change, consumer behavior will change, certainly. And there's going to have to be answers for that.
It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I think we're in one of the most single exciting next 5 years that have existed in the past, I don't know, 20, 30 years of real estate. There's so many moving pieces and so many variables and no one knows how it's going to end up.
So less agents or more agents going forward? Ugh.
I mean, I'd love to see, like, look, I've worked with a lot of agents. I'd love to see more agents entering the market, finding success and having fun, right? And making lots of money and being super happy and prosperous and like crushing it. The way the market's going right now, in terms of when people get in, it, the myth that you get freedom of schedule and tons of money and a white BMW 5 Series the second you get your real estate license, when that dies, more people will find success with it. But until that happens, I think that there will be less agents coming into the market and less agents finding success, right? I think the number is like 4 to 6 agents leave the like the business every hour right now. In 2020, 2021, 2022, everyone and their mom was getting a license because we were in the craziest bull run of all time. Now that the market's tapered off a little bit, there's less people finding success. There's less transactions happening. It's just the economics of it, which means opportunity for a lot of folks.
So is that opportunity, is it easier to build a team and a staff in this environment you just described now that we're in 24?
Yep.
Or when everybody was getting a license, was it easier to recruit and build a team in that environment?
I think you get to pick your hard, right? So like what I mean by that is if you compare them, there's pros and cons to both. All these agents coming into the market, all these transactions happening, you could like kind of stumble into transactions in 2020, 21, 2022. Now that it's changing a little bit, it means less people coming into the market, but it also means people pulling back on things like marketing expense. It cracks me up when I hear like, oh, well, the market slowed down, so I stopped spending money on postcards. And I'm like, why? Like everyone's doing the same thing. It spells opportunity, right? So in this market specifically, I think it's a great opportunity for team leaders and brokers, because usually when one group of people is running away, that means you get to run towards it, right? And eat up market share. A lot of our clients, and I know that's a lot of people you and I respect and know, their strategy is cool. Everyone else is shrinking. I'm going to expand, right? Even though it's tougher and there's less transactions happening, when the market flips and if rates go to 5%, like Steve and Tom are talking about, the market's going to go nuts again, right? In a great way. I think buyer demand right now and sellers being kind of locked in changes at 5% because the sticker shock's gone. The last year and a half, 2 years, everyone was so used to like 2.5-3% rates that when they went to like 6%, it was like, oh, well, we're just going to wait for them to come down. The sticker shock goes away. People start transacting again in mass at 5%, and you've recruited 300 people, right? Like Lisa's recruited like 39 or 40 people year to date.
Year to date.
Like those people, when the market shifts, are going to have a small army, right? And she's training them and equipping them and teaching them how to do it. When the market shifts, it's going to be a
when she actually gets inventory in her market.
But that's like, you can't have your cake and eat it too.
You can't experience a hockey stick growth in your business unless you're ready for the moment. It's like, okay, wow, there's all this inventory. And then you don't have the staffing. Yep. You don't have the answers to these.
The same concept of like luck is preparation meeting opportunity. There's going to be a lot of people when rates go to 5%, a lot of team leaders and brokers that got lucky. And it's like, no. I prepared for this and then timing was right. And now I get to ride the wave.
Yeah.
Right. So I think the teams and brokerages that will win are people that are focusing on obsessively helping people improve their skill sets.
Yeah.
Right. That's who wins.
If you made it this far in the interview, you're like, wow, there's some real nuggets in here on not only, you know, the recruiting, but the training side and putting all those pieces together. And my style, I'm bouncing all over the place. Yeah. So if you're looking for more details, I think we've talked about it. We're going to put together a master recruiting guide that you're going to help with. You know, obviously you're going to put it together.
Yep.
We're going to co-brand it and we're going to get that out here. So make sure you're on the newsletter if you want to get that. Yep. Obviously you can just reach out to Humanize directly the way I linked down below, but this is great, man.
Absolutely.
I mean, your background from somebody who's done it, prop tech, who's done it with National Brokerage REMAX, done it in the indie brokerage world, and now is helping a whole bunch of brokerages and teams across the country recruit. I can't think of someone better than to solve these problems for agents.
I'm excited to share what I've got and hopefully help someone.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on, Chris.
Absolutely, man.
Appreciate it, brother. Happy to be here.